This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Recently, our program's history doctor, Bill Smith, and I talked about the impact, possible impact, of the Tea Party on this November's midterm elections and how the Tea Party fits into the historical perspective. Now our history doctor is back to continue talking about third parties.
Well, let's make an important distinction again, as we did in our last discussion. The Tea Party, as I see it, is more of a movement. It's not a third party. You made a great analogy. Nowhere in any of our neighborhoods is there's a blue sign for this party and a red sign for this party. And while the Greens may have a sign and the Libertarians may have a sign, I've yet to see a yellow, polka dot, purple, whatever color sign that says Tea Party.
Well, that's true. That's true. However, what's to say the Tea Party won't be permanent and 10 years from now you and I aren't still talking about them?
Indeed, anything is possible. The Democrats themselves are the result of a party split that happened in the early 1800s. So we really can't say that they're a single-issue startup like some of the parties we discussed last time. The Republicans themselves, as we know them today, certainly fit the bill. Their anti-slavery start in 1852 was a breakaway from a dying party that we knew of as the Whigs. So certainly, this could go down that road. The likelihood of it is a little difficult to see.
Where does it all start?
Well, you know, the founding fathers and George Washington, they always had this vision that there wouldn't be partisanship, and that's just not human nature. By the time that Washington himself was finishing out his second term, the party system was already starting to come about. You know, the Federalists were the founding fathers' party, but it drew its first opposition from the Democratic Republicans, hyphenated long title. War of 1812 became their great issue, and the first party split as the Jacksonians pulled away into the Democrats, and the remainders of that Democratic-Republican Party fell back with the old Federalists to create the Whigs. So our first set of sort of established parties were Whig and Democrat. It's the Whigs that were crushed by the current Republicans to become the major second party. Again, during those great abolitionist cycles of our election periods of 56 and, of course, 60 that put Lincoln into the White House. The Whigs were more of the states' rights party that wanted the strength of Congress over the president. And that, plus the issue of slavery, split them apart and set the stage for a new party. Are we at that point yet? Hard to say.
Well, 2010's midterm elections, generally, when we think third parties historically, we think presidential elections.
That's right.
Okay.
That's right. And you know, we also think a little bit more ideology. We do have some somewhat permanent third parties in our country, and the Tea Party is getting all the attention. You mentioned a couple of them at the top. The Libertarian Party has been organized for a long time with a series of candidates. The Green Party has risen as concerns over those type issues have given a formulation to it. And in Europe and in many of those democracies, the Greens are fairly significant. You hate to say third party in those systems because those parties have a lot of impact, and there's four, five, six parties.
A non-fourth party,
yes,
over there.
Yes,
yeah.
Exactly. The socialists, though, I think kind of embody that party that's always been there. They're a great example of that. They've been around almost the entirety of the 20th century, and they've had two great peaks. The first one with four-time presidential candidate Eugene V. Debs.
Yes.
I know a name that I'm sure just piques everybody's attention from their days in high school or college American history. That was their organizing phase. And then taking over with their six-time presidential nominee in our lifetimes, he finally ran out of steam of Norman Thomas. The opponents to FDR will claim that he undercut the growing strength of the Debs-era socialist with his more liberal proposals heading into his 36th reelection. But isn't that typical of what we see in our two-party politics? When a group begins to get some momentum and has an issue that one of the two can co-opt to themselves, as was said of Franklin Roosevelt at the time, he caught the socialists in swimming and stole their clothes.
when you, especially in the presidential cycle, when you go into the ballot box, you don't just see green and libertarian and socialist. Sometimes, you know, there's the constitutionalists. Sometimes there are as many as 11 or 12 or 13 parties on the ballot.
Well, certainly in 2000, you had that when Pat Buchanan and the infamous butterfly ballot in Florida became somewhat of an issue along those ways. But, you know, in the spirit of education and entertainment, how about that? Is it a party quiz? I'll give you the name, and you'll tell me yes or no. Is that a real American third party?
So did this third party actually exist at some point in American history?
Right.
This is just like several years ago we did something about bowl games.
And that's right.
Was there really an aluminum bowl? Which, yes, there was. But
yes,
okay.
There was.
In
Little
Rock,
here we go.
Okay.
We'll start off with a couple of soft ones.
Mm-hmm.
Bull Moose.
Oh, Bull Moose, yeah. Teddy Roosevelt.
Yes, that's right. That was a function of a split in the GOP in 1912. The informal name of that party was the Bull Moose. Bonus points. What was the real name?
The Flying Squirrel Party?
No. Moose and Squirrel were not involved in this.
What was it? I don't know.
It was the Progressives.
Oh, the Progressives.
One
okay.
of three flavors of Progressives. Progressive being one of those generic names that gets reused several times.
And interesting because Bull Moose headed by a former president, not someone who wanted to be president for the first time.
Well, exactly. And Theodore Roosevelt splitting the Republican Party because he could not push aside his handpicked successor, William Howard Taft, who he had had some issues with and wanted to replace.
Okay, so Bull Moose, yes.
Bull Moose, yes. Union Party.
Oh, that sounds too generic and too ingrained in the political system to say no. I'll say yes, there has been a Union Party.
Yes, indeed. It was the would-be vehicle of Huey Long.
Ah, okay.
His organizers, after his assassination, continued on to run the Union Party out with some interesting results in 1936. They were more of a rabble-rousing party than an impact, but yes, indeed.
Okay.
How about Liberty Party?
Yeah, I'm going to say yes.
Sounds awful generic, doesn't it?
It does.
Is that your final answer?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, indeed it was.
Okay.
But here's the cook. Who was the nominee of the Liberty Party in 1932?
1932.
There is a Northwest Arkansas tie.
Well, it's too late to be our favorite Montanay founder. No?
William Coyne Harvey?
Coyne Harvey in 32.
In 32.
Wow. How old was Coyne Harvey in 32?
Well, very.
Okay. Right.
All right.
Okay.
The Know-Nothings.
Yes.
Well, that's right. They were a reaction to the influx of immigrants during the mid-1800s. Essentially an anti-Catholic party that worried about non-Anglo-Saxon newcomers to America. They were a semi-secret organization, thus the name Know-Nothings.
Uh-huh.
If you asked someone, were you a member of the party, your answer was, I know nothing.
Oh, hence, Sergeant Schultz, yes.
Exactly, yes.
Yes.
Exactly, very well done. Eventually, they become a mashup of the Whig remnants to make one last run in that 1860 election as the American Party, another great generic party name.
That'd be a great thing for one party to throw at its opposing candidate now, right? He's a member of the Know-Nothing. I mean, it has a different sort of term.
Well, I think we just accuse them of just being flat out Know-Nothing.
Right.
Yes.
Okay.
Anti-Masonic Party.
Well, I suppose. I mean, it seems rather thin thing to go on, but yeah, what the heck?
Well, it is a heck of a single issue,
yes,
isn't it?
It
did not do much, although in 1836,
true.
William Wirt carried Vermont.
Wow.
Got the seven electoral votes of Vermont as an anti-Masonic.
So if you're going to run as the anti-Masonic, you know, but don't have to put money in
it's
Vermont.
It's a niche buy,
right.
But it's there.
Okay.
Okay, Temperance.
Oh, sure, yeah.
Well, they are, you're right, that's an easy one. They are the ultimate single-issue party, crusading against demon rum with a prohibitionist party single plank, finally gets the 18th Amendment through. It is one of my favorites. They ran candidates from 1884 to 1920, one of their peak years, 258,000 votes in the popular. It's got to be one of the greatest candidates ever matched with a party, the Temperance Party. And their candidate, Silas C. Swallow.
Wow.
Yes, that's one of my faves.
Now, and to put some things in perspective, alcohol was seen as quite the social issue at the height of the Temperance Party.
Oh, absolutely.
They connected it to broken families and destitution and things like that.
It was the single issue of its day.
Right.
Not unlike today, abortion rights is often a single issue. But today, we don't have the parties fracturing off into that single-minded third-party movement that just keep—they work within the parties.
Right.
And you do have one party that tends to lean more toward one side of that question and one toward the other. It is an issue that has two sides, unlike temperance, which really had very few people standing up and saying, I am all about saloons and alcohol. You didn't have the counter to the temperance movement.
But, right.
You know, they obviously achieved their goal, and that didn't work out so well.
Exactly.
The National States Rights Party.
If it existed, I'm going to go yes again. It's probably, wow, I'm thinking that's either pretty close to the end of the Civil War or some sort of Jim Crow era party.
You got one out of two there. Let me pose it this way. The National States Rights Party or the States Rights Democratic Party.
Okay. So I'm going to say that was Jim Crow era?
You're saying yes to both then?
Okay, hit me with that again.
Okay, National States Rights Party, you're saying yes?
Yes.
And you're voting for the Jim Crow era?
Yes.
Okay, how about the States Rights Democratic Party?
Well, that sounds like that. I'm going to say no, that did not exist.
Okay, well, yes to both.
Oh, okay.
And, interestingly enough, just to sort of twist everything around, they really are the same issue, but two very different flavors of the same. The States Rights Democrat Party, you'd better know them by their common name, the Dixiecrats.
Ah, okay, there you go.
So in 1948, Strom Thurmond ran on that platform with a single issue, protecting the segregationist South. Thurmond won four states and 39 electoral votes in 48. Ironically, this is also one of the elections where we get another flavor of progressive party, because Henry Wallace, the former ousted vice president, took a splintering of the Democrats against Harry Truman off into a progressive party, the Democrats, the Republicans, and the States' Rights Democratic Party. So the Democrats had three slices, yet Truman managed to win. That's one of the great ironies. Okay, so there's Part A. But let's go back to the National States Rights Party.
Okay.
Same issue, but now it's back in 1960 and much more edgy, if we could put it that way. I mean, the first time through was bad enough, but now it has become much more of an issue, and it is mainly because of the nominee of that party, another Arkansas tie.
Not Faubus?
Orville Faubus.
Orville Faubus.
Ran for president in 60, and you can imagine how hard line the approach was that time through. Tough enough with Thurmond and a very blunt effort to keep Jim Crow in place, but it had hardened by the time. So a little tweak of the name of the party and a much more hardened party. How about the Independent Party?
You know what? I think that's too generic. I'm going to say no.
Unfortunately, that was the label that John Anderson took for himself
right,
in 1980.
Right. That's right, which was barely a party. He was like it, right?
And very forgettable and generic when you think about the Independence Party.
Although he did get a decent percentage of the vote.
But didn't scratch in the electoral.
No, he did not.
How about the Reform Party?
Well, yeah.
And the candidate?
For Minnesota governor or for president? Ross Perot.
Indeed. Perot ran
twice.
Right, twice. And when he ran more as Perot and not the Reform Party, he got 19% of the vote, but still didn't win a single electoral college vote.
So every single one of them. You didn't have to make one up.
No, I didn't. And I think that's one of the great fun things when you look back at some of these parties and the single issues. There's great diversity in issues in American politics. But because of the way the electoral college system is set up for winner-take-all votes at the state level, that diversity really does get mashed out of the way when it comes to party politics at the state and the national level.
You and I are both in our 40s.
Yes.
Mid to late, depending on your definition.
Yes.
Do you think if you and I are on this planet for another, let's be generous, 50 years, and we have this same conversation, we'll be still talking about Democrats and Republicans as the major two parties?
You know, history would tell us no, because if you think about it, the Founding Fathers era had one two-party system. In the 1800s, that morphed into a second two-party system. In the 1900s, those two parties had significant challenges to themselves and had to morph their positions to the point that, you know, the Republicans and the Democrats of 1900 and the Republicans and the Democrats of 1999, in many ways, were quite different parties. So to say that we would go another 50 years well into the 21st century here and still maintain D and R being literally what they are and not seeing one or the other pushed aside, I think there's a fairly reasonable chance that that might happen.
And until we have that conversation in 50 years,
we're history.